Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome, everybody, to season number 5, episode 2 of Cinematica. And welcoming back to the studio after her holidays, we have Kaylee back. How was your trip?
It was wonderful. I got to be in the sun. I have a nice... Well, that's about the most that I tan, you know. But I got a tan. I got to check out some very... a very nice cinema in Sydney.
All right, we can talk about that in a little while as well.
And I got to meet one of our fans, Sakura.
Oh, 69. Did you? Oh,
yeah,
brilliant.
We got to have a drink at the Golden Age Cinema, which was beautiful.
Excellent. Oh, well, that's good. So building bridges across
the Tasman.
Waters. Yes. Simon fans are going to be disappointed by today's show because for the second week in a row, ill health prevents him taking part in the show today.
Mm. So it's just the two of us. All to improve his health.
Yes. Yes, indeed. He's off to... get scanned and specialised and ultrasounded and all of the rest of it. So, I saw him a little bit earlier on. He did look a little bit poorly, I have to say, a bit tender, as you would expect. So, best wishes to him. Get well soon, and hopefully he'll be back on the show next week. In today's show, we climb Everest in 3D. We also try and break the bank of an internet casino. And we solve the mystery of two missing children on Cinematica this week. You made a face there.
I made a face because I just can't handle any more movies or miniseries about children going missing and, like, drugs and the horrible things happening. I watched Top of the Lake on... I know we don't talk about TV, but Top of the Lake, honestly, should not count as television. So beautiful, even on the little tiny Air New Zealand.
Oh, you watched it on the plane.
I watched the first half on the way over and the second half on the way back, and it was devastating.
Well, I wonder what people who are flying to New Zealand for the first time think of that. Oh, Top of the Lake. Let's see what Queenstown's like. Not. So, top work by the New Zealand Tourism Board getting that one placed where they have. Mm.
And lots of great New Zealand talent in that beautiful, beautiful miniseries as well, directed by Jane Campion. So.
Yes, indeed. And I've lost track of my train of thought now. Where were we? What? How did we bring that up?
I grimaced at prisoners.
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah. And with some justification, I have to say, and we'll come to that later on in the show. But first, you are in charge of the mailbag, so you can probably... Some of this will mean nothing to you because you weren't here.
I'll just read the most recent ones.
I want you to make sure that you tweet the positive feedback to my singing from last week's show.
That was brilliant. I listened to the show. I saw the tweets and I listened to it, and it was amazing. Oh, amazing.
So, that's episode. That's season 5, episode 1 for completists. We are in season 5, exactly. So if you missed last week's show, then, you know, go back. And it's just me and Sarah from the Sunday Star Times and Skyping the whole show. And it's good. It's good stuff. And I'm particularly proud of the ending.
So, Bar Steve, also known as Steve Barr, Beyond the Edge, three-word review, docudrama without cheese.
And even docudrama's really two words, isn't it?
No, there'd at least be a hyphen in there.
Yeah.
And that sort of links them together.
I'm the last person to be picking on anybody's word count.
After accepting the mission of going to watch Riddick... Adds the bell.
Oh, yeah, because he actually tweeted what he was in Kaikoura and didn't know whether he should watch Riddick or... Oh, I'm trying to remember.
Percy Jackson.
And it was... Which is no... There's just no comparison, really. But it's nice that he asked.
Have a nap.
Yeah. But the Mayfair in Kaikoura is a delightful little, very, very old-fashioned theatre. And it still has intervals. Still has intermissions. Oh. Yeah.
That would have been good if you're watching a movie you don't particularly like.
Yeah, but and I also asked him to do a little bit of natural history reporting on Riddick for us, because there's some, you know, he is the Cinematica expert when it comes to creatures, basically.
I think we need to start handing out badges, like little Boy Scout badges, you know, it's like, or Girl Scout badges, but, you know, badges to our expert, our Cinematica experts.
Yeah, indeed. Exactly. So, no, he and his feedback was excellent. So thank you very much.
Yes. So his review of Riddick, it achieved its not especially lofty goals, and his two-word review was boxes ticked, but it was a fine choice for Saturday night in Kaikoura.
Mm.
Fred Thompson says his two-word review of Prisoners, captive viewing, tad long, but a great performance from the cast.
And thanks, Fred Thompson. Your two-word reviews are coming thick and fast. It's nice to know that, because we have quite a few listeners that actually don't go to the movies very often because of family commitments. So it's always nice when we have listeners who do.
And Reese Pie said, I had to stop driving because I was laughing so hard at Dan's imitation of Metallica intros. That's exactly how it sounds to me. Agreed.
Cool.
And also, we got mail. We have a postcard from Barbados from @LegGully, one of our lovely fans who we've actually met in person. Says, hi guys, wish you were here. Dover Beach is just down the road from where my dad was born. Two-word review, blissful paradise. Take your show on the road again. Love your work.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to do a world tour, and it has to, I can see it from here, Barbados, yes.
That's your two-word review. Yes.
So, what have our fans and the rest of New Zealand been watching this weekend? With, you know, a few, it was a little bit quiet in terms of films opening. Gravity is still doing the business, I presume.
It is indeed. So, in the number 5 position, up from 6, Two Guns. Opening at number 4, Runner Runner. In 3rd, up from 7th, Mr. Pip, which is great news.
That's fantastic. Well done. Yeah.
Opening at number 2, Prisoners, and still in number 1 spot is Gravity.
And now, something I've noticed from the US box office figures for Gravity is that the week-on-week drop has been very, very small, only about 24%, I think, which is, for usually when a film goes straight in at number 1, it'll drop 50% second week. Gravity only 24%. Is that the same for New Zealand? What's the drop?
It's dropped 47.4%.
Oh, okay, so not as strong. Holding as strong as in the US. Yeah,
that is quite surprising. But then you think about, you know, the bigger multiplexes that have it on multiple screens, and it's, you know, they're still playing it. It's just not on 4 screens. It's on 2.
Yeah, true. And as we mentioned in the show.
Yeah, and that's only a screen change of 5.
So it's only dropped 5 screens.
Only dropped 5 screens. Right. So the percentage does sound quite scary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but not unusual for a film in second week when it's had that really big launch.
And it's done. It's just about at 2.5 million box office to date in New Zealand.
Okay.
So pretty good.
I'd say it is pretty good. Let's just see over the next few weeks whether it has legs when you consider all of the other options that are going to be in front of people over the next few weeks. Now, time to talk about the movies that are on at the moment. Or actually, the first one that we're going to talk about is lots of people will have had a chance to see. There's been sneaks and previews, and the official premiere was last night.
And I've missed all of them.
Yeah, that's kind of blown my plans just a little bit, because last communication from Kaylee, the last thing we heard from Kaylee was, yes, I'll be going to the premiere. So
didn't work out, unfortunately.
All right. So it looks like I'm going to be shouldering the burden of the Everest
Epic
movie Beyond, Beyond
Epic
the
journey.
Edge myself. But in the meantime, have a clip from it.
You don't conquer a mountain. If you're lucky enough, the mountain gives you a chance to stand on the top.
Back in 1953, it was a great big question mark. Could it be done?
Above 26,000 feet is what we call the death zone. It's called the death zone because you are slowly dying.
Well, I didn't have the complete conviction that we were going to be successful.
Excuse me. Is it so? Beyond the Edge 3D, the docudrama, very accurate description by Steve Barr there, the retelling of just this one small but very, very important chapter in the life of Sir Ed Hillary, the great New Zealand hero, climbing Everest in 1953. And this is a film that mixes still photography from the expedition, 16 millimeter color photography from the expedition, and recreation, merges them all together pretty skillfully to tell the story of that one expedition, that one trip up to the top of Mount Everest, the highest peak in the world. You've all been to school, you don't need me to tell you that. Just out of interest, I realized in discussing this with somebody else earlier on this week that I haven't seen a $5 note for ages. I pay for everything with FPOS. And, you know, Ed Hillary, I used to see him every day. You know, it used to be that reminder of who he was and what and his achievements. And it's like, I don't even have one on my person at the moment. And so it's coming around at a fairly at a good time. You know, it's the 60th anniversary. It is a long time since it happened, and it in this accelerated world that we live in, it's easy for kids to go through primary school and high school and not know what the magnitude of that achievement was. And this is a film that, even though a lot of this material is available elsewhere, the 16mm color footage that was used was formed the basis of a documentary that came out, you know, almost immediately after the expedition was complete. So, you know, and I'm sure, you know, the National Geographic Channel and the Discovery Channel, they've all done sort of stories about Hillary and Everest and Tenzing and all of that sort of stuff. The difference here is that this is being told by New Zealanders and also 3D. We talked in a couple of weeks ago about Gravity and about how Gravity is a film that you really, you know, given the choice, you should always go and see that in 3D because it makes such a difference to the emotional and spatial experience that you're getting from it. I would say that Beyond the Edge is very similar. If you've got the opportunity to see it in 3D, you really should, because the footage of the modern footage of Everest, the second unit actually climbed Everest a couple of years ago to get footage from the summit, and to have that in 3D is really spectacular. The post-produced 3D of the still photography and the earlier footage is done in a very sensitive way. It doesn't sort of scream as if somebody's just been at it with the Photoshop brush to try and make it seem more than it is. The merging of the material is skillful, I think. But this is a film where the space between things, the distance from one thing to the next, from safety to not safety, it's really important to your emotional appreciation of it. And so I would say that this is definitely a film to watch in 3D. My only qualms probably about Beyond the Edge would be, you know, how much this story has been seen before, and does it really add much to our understanding of Hillary and of the expedition. It's pretty straightforward telling. It's all told through voiceover. So there are vintage interviews with Sir Ed. There are recent interviews with mountaineering experts and Ed's son Peter. And these are all skillfully merged together to form almost one single narrative voiceover with lots of different voices forming it. So difficult to talk about when you haven't seen it, Kaylee.
I'm saving it. I want to savor it.
Yeah,
you know, want to be special. But
well, the premiere would have been fairly special, I would have thought.
Yeah, I didn't want to go by myself. My date had to work.
Oh, really?
Sad story.
Yeah, I think you just need to harden up a little bit.
But there's a screening at the Roxy.
It's only going to the movies.
And you're going to be there.
Yes, tonight. So sadly, people listening to this will be hearing this news too late to do anything about it, because I'm not going to be able to post the show before I head to the Roxy to host this event. But there is a special screening at the Roxy tonight with Leanne Pooley, the director of the film, and Chad Moffat, who plays the recreated Ed Hillary. They're going to be there to answer audience Q&As after the screening. And the intention, and I can't really guarantee this because it's at a venue I've never worked before, but we're hoping to record that session, and certainly they've said that they're happy for us to record it. And the pick of the Q's and the A's from that session will be in the show next week. Mm. And if it's a particularly good one, as I'm hoping, we may even do a special Cinematica extra with the whole Q&A. So fingers crossed that that'll work out. But yeah, that's tonight. So we will be doing more about Beyond the Edge as the season progresses, as season 5 progresses. Now, did I leave an envelope on the desk
there?
Yeah,
I can see. There's an envelope.
Okay, here we go. That's for you. Do you want to open that? And well, it's not actually for you, but it's
for me to open.
Yeah, it's for you to open. It's got work in it.
Yee.
For you. So if you want to open that up, that arrived this morning, especially by courier.
Make it rain. yes. So, look at that.
Oh, how many have we got?
1, 2, 3. We have 3 double passes.
Brilliant. Okay, this is Beyond the Edge. 3 double passes courtesy of Rialto Entertainment. And I'm going to ask you to come up with some kind of task for people. How do we want to divvy these up? Or do we just want first in?
First in, first serve. But if you can tell us where Chad works.
Okay. So that will require at least a little bit of Googling, I would imagine.
Mm.
Right. Mm. Tiny wee bit of Googling.
Slash,
we're going to make you work.
What does he do as his job?
Okay. So, yeah, some personal details about Chad Moffat, who plays Ed Hillary in
Beyond the Edge.
He's a
lovely person. I know him.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting him. Looking forward to meeting him tonight. And I hope that he's full of entertaining stories, because otherwise it'll be a short night. Anyway, so we have 3 doubles, and they can be used anywhere that Beyond the Edge is screening, and I think that they're valid for a couple of weeks, so you should be able to take full advantage of them. So, yes, check it all out. And so I suppose I should come up with a 2-word review for Beyond the Edge in 3D.
Yes.
Yes, you're looking at me sternly, quizzically, and that would be, bearing in mind, I'm not the strongest person when it comes to heights, and I'm also not the most adventurous traveler in the world. So I would say my 2-word review for this film about Everest is high anxiety.
Nice.
All right. Time for some news.
The man they call Harvey Scissorhands is at it again. This time, the struggle is for the final cut of the Princess Grace biopic, Grace of Monaco, with director Olivier Dahan, attacking producer Harvey Weinstein's decision to cut the film, starring Nicole Kidman as Grace Kelly. Dahan is quoted as saying, "It's got nothing to do with cinema. They want a commercial film smelling of daisies," he added.
Smelly vision!
He added, "It's not over yet. I haven't given up."
Something else that he said in another interview, or maybe an extended version of that same interview, he talked about how nowadays you have to cut a trailer very early in the lifespan of a film, and that apparently was went over quite well. And now Harvey is trying to make the film seem more like the trailer that's already gone out.
Oh, no.
So yes, so definitely a clash of.
The trailer wasn't that good. It was mostly text.
Who knows? But yeah, definitely the idea that, you know, 6 months out from a film even being finished, a trailer has to go out, and then, you know, let's make the film actually like the trailer, which actually has there's a modicum of decency to that, isn't there? Because, you know, at least somebody's decided that if they don't make the film a little bit like the trailer, it won't be as misleading as most trailers are.
Maybe they should just release a second trailer that's more like the film.
Oh, yeah, but that's... Yeah, see,
free ideas.
Yeah, free ideas, Hollywood.
The BFI London Film Festival closed earlier this week with an awards ceremony, as many film festivals do. Winners included...
I love it when I do this to you.
Pawel Pawlikowski's IDA. It's all in caps.
Yeah, Ida.
Ida? Okay.
Yeah. I choose news stories based on the...
number of consonants. Ida, which won Best Picture, and Anthony Chen's Ilo Ilo or Ilo Ilo?
Which I seem to recall was in the New Zealand Film Festival.
I believe so.
Yes. So just again, for those people who think we're a deserted backwater of the world of cinema.
It's not true. We watch them before they get the awards.
Yes.
We are ahead of our times. won Best First Feature. Sir Christopher Lee was honored with BFI's highest honor, the BFI Fellowship, which was presented to him by longtime fan Johnny Depp.
And apparently it was very moving, the whole experience. Of course, Sir Christopher Lee, one of the... Oh, I'm amazed that he hadn't received this before, to be honest, because, you know...
A bit insulting.
Yes, that's what he should have done. He should have got up on stage and said, you know, about time.
Yeah. And in the most important news of the week, film fans are descending on the South Island... slash.
Yes, because the South Island now has two official names.
Really?
Yes.
Did that happen while I was away?
Yep.
How do you pronounce it?
Te Waipounamu.
Okay.
I think. I'm not being national radio trained. That's close enough, I hope.
Yeah.
I hope not to insult anybody. But yes, I think from now on, henceforward, we should always use the both official names when we talk about North Island and South Island. Not the North Island. Not the South Island.
To South Island. to try and catch a glimpse of Michael Fassbender, whose Western Slow West started shooting around Twizel on Monday. Also in the cast are Cody Smith McPhee and Ben Mendelsohn. Oh my God, Ben Mendelsohn and Michael Fassbender. If I could get a photo between those two, it'd be like the greatest.
I'm surprised you were here, actually. I thought you would have been on the ferry already.
So close.
Down there,
so...
hitchhiking your way down towards Alexandra.
It's a great idea, actually.
In my other job, I did ask whether there was a possibility of any set visits for this particular one because...
And do you need an assistant?
Well, obviously, but then I was told that, yes, there was the possibility of a set visit, but there would be no interviews with any of the cast, no photographs, and possibly an interview with the director, but not guaranteed. And so it seemed like an awfully long way to go.
We'll send you to Twizel, but we can't guarantee anything.
Yeah. So, we'll just have to wait and see on that one. And no doubt it'll be 18 months before we actually get to see the film.
But just to know he's in the same country.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It is. It's not quite as exciting as when Sigourney Weaver was in Wellington for all that time.
Mm.
You know. In Wellington, we can be a bit blasé about all of this because, we've had a good run of, you know, stumbling across stars.
It's hard for me to be blasé about it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was in a screening with... that short guy who's in The Hobbit.
Martin Freeman. Yeah.
He was sitting behind me and I was freaking out.
Well,
but
yeah.
I couldn't do anything. I wasn't allowed.
Of course, the days of big stars coming to town, any town in New Zealand, are really numbered because, as was mentioned in Parliament yesterday, Jacinda Ardern asked a question of Stephen Joyce, the minister responsible for the industry for sort of economic development. You know, why is the film business in New Zealand in such a terrible strait? And it really is. There are people leaving the business in droves. Certainly in Auckland, you know, crew trucks are being sold off, and people are going off and doing sort of, you know, landscape gardening and what have you, because there's just not enough work. The international productions that used to keep studios busy and used to keep crews busy aren't coming because of the New Zealand dollar and the lack of subsidy compared to our competitors around the world. And TV commercials, maybe they'll go to Queenstown to shoot a car commercial once or twice a year, but yeah, otherwise it's really thin on the ground now. And I think that for a long time, governments of both stripes have been content to ride on the waves of what's been happening over in Miramar with the big international productions that happened there, without really thinking about what was going to happen afterwards. And, you know, people are doing it really tough.
Yeah, because Miramar has that super internet pipeline that goes, you know, to the States, pretty much direct to LA from what I've heard. Is it they just they shoot it in LA and then just ship it through?
Yeah, in terms of post-production. Exactly. And you know, there was also news which I didn't include in the news today, but the announcement, well, not announcement, it's sort of a bit of a leak really from Sam Worthington, the star of Avatar, that Avatar 2, 3 and probably 4 are going to shoot start shooting at the end of 2014, which is a long time to wait for crews in Wellington who are sort of hanging out for a gig like that. And
are
of course,
they shooting it here?
I don't think. I would be very surprised if they don't, because of Cameron's geographic closeness and you know the real estate that he's bought in Wairarapa, etc. So I'd be surprised if they don't, but I suspect that there's a similar amount of game playing going on.
I wonder if he's going to be at Toast Martinborough this year.
Was he last year?
No.
No, it doesn't seem like it's his thing, really, does it?
No.
No, unless there's a robot involved. You know, maybe he's if he designed a robot great picker. It would be, you know, launching that. But he's a little bit busy. Anyway, the thing is that even when Avatar does shoot, so much of it is green screen and so much of it is performance capture. It's not the kind of thing that keeps a giant crew like the Hobbit crew together. And so, you know, where's the work for all those people that we've trained and all of those
it's
skilled
It's all
people?
In animation.
Yeah. Retool. Reschedule. Mm. This is a really tough... it's really tough for the people in the film business at the moment, and there doesn't appear to be any plan from anybody in government as to how to address it. So that was our news.
Right, and another film festival news, of course, because it's something near and dear to my heart. Festival season is kicking off in the Middle East. There's the Abu Dhabi Film Festival opening up.
And have they got a program? Is there a program that people can look at online to
there is.
See what's
planned? I'm assuming that their whole program will be online.
Right. Any star guests, international guests that your boyfriend might be able to get an autograph?
No, they're not allowed to talk to them. It's like very hush hush. Okay. Because the international guests are not necessarily in the films. They just are pretty much paid to be there.
Oh, right.
It's like paid appearances, and they get to go to the parties and the staff, but the staff don't get to go to the festival parties until midnight. They're not allowed actually into the party until the celebrities have probably left already. So
sounds
but
like
I'm not
fun.
Sure. I'm not sure who's coming, but I think the guests are listed. But it should be good so our listeners who are in the Middle East, because there are a few of you, see you on Google.
Look,
in our stats, I know you're there.
I'm going to look it up now, and while I'm doing that, what I'm going to ask you to do is a wee bit of favour. Can you review that posh new cinema that you went to in Sydney and tell us what's so special about it?
Oh, so the Golden Age Cinema in Sydney, in Surrey Hills, is a fantastic little cinema. Just one screen, and what it is a revamped and sort of brought back from the ashes. It's a screening room in the old Paramount building. So it's in the basement, and there is a bar area that
the Paramount. What is the Paramount building? Is it
it's like Paramount Pictures building?
Oh, the office, like the studio's office.
Yeah, and so they had a screening room, so that's all been sort of like repainted and new seats put in, but it's very, very sort of 50s style, and they have this great little bar attached to it as well with a fantastic drinks menu, and they make amazing flavored popcorn. And they play sort of a mixture of old films and new-ish, like edging on second run. I think they have two screenings a day, one or two screenings a day. And it's just a really lovely little place to go sit and feel very high to do and important in the Paramount Pictures building in Surrey Hills. It's quite cool. We didn't get to see a film because we were going to go watch The Breakfast Club, but it was all sold out.
I would imagine they sell out really super fast, don't they? Because it's so tiny.
Yeah, it's so small. But Rob Caddo, who is a fan of the show and who I was staying with, did do a Malick double feature last weekend, so
that would have been good. Okay, so I'm just looking at the Abu Dhabi Film Festival website, and
I think they're playing Broken Circle Breakdown. I think that's, I know that's right. one, of, I'm pretty sure that's one of
it
the
says,
ones they're playing.
For the juries, it says information about the 2013 juries will be available soon. So they're leaving it a little bit late because it says countdown, one day.
No.
So you need to pay a little bit more attention because actually they're hitting pay, what is it, pay dirt? No, it's definitely the crunch. The crunch is coming. Okay, so A Touch of Sin, which is played in Wellington. They did an episode in the life of an iron picker. That sounds great. Ida, which we just talked about, playing there. In the Sands of Babylon, Jealousy, Night Moves, Kelly Reichardt's film.
It'd be a really interesting festival to go to. There you go. So, and it's also one of the festivals that I may or may not be applying to work at next year.
Okay.
I'm going to see what happens. But I'm honestly interested to go and watch films at the New Zealand Festival and then watch the version that they screen at the Abu Dhabi Film Festival because they are heavily edited.
Yeah.
For content.
Yes. So for local sensitivities.
Yes. And they also do like female only screenings as well. And sort of there's all this, it's a very interesting cultural sort of experience. And it would be great to go see what it's like.
The festival that has just finished that I am the most disappointed that I didn't get to go to and I'm really, really keen to go is the Reykjavik International Film Festival, which finished maybe 10 days ago. And in Iceland, obviously, Reykjavik, not Finland, is the more geographically challenged of you might think. And apparently it is amazing. And like a lot of festivals in smaller places, you know, they take over school halls and all the rest of it. But the sort of there are lots of sort of side trips to do a whole lot of Icelandic tourism stuff, like the hot pools in the snow and all of that sort of stuff. So you get the full Iceland experience. But they'd had a really fantastic range of guests at the festival this year, including James Gray, who brought his film The Immigrant that starred Joaquin Phoenix. And he was hosting sort of Q&A sessions and all sorts of things. So, yeah, there are festivals all over the world. And I just think that if you love movies, if you're a movie buff, finding a festival that's in a place that you've always wanted to visit is a great way to sort of kill two birds with one stone because you get the movie experience, you get to see films usually before they open anywhere else, and you also get to see a part of the world that you always wanted to visit. So I actually think that, yeah, for movie buff, those sorts of holidays, yeah, terrific. And of course, you're thinking about working on your one.
Well, just because I have that in.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it would be an interesting exercise just working in that environment as well. Yeah.
I may have to stage a fake marriage to get it all organized, but you know.
Well, just quietly, it's about time you two actually made this official. You know, that's the perfect rationale. Don't fake it.
You talk to my man friend about it. You convince him.
All right. When he comes back, I'll have the chat.
Yep. Thanks, Dad.
All right. Time for another film of which only I have seen.
Forced to move offshore is one of the internet's dirty little secrets. Online poker.
You're about to jet off to a country you've never been to with a language you do not speak.
Do you have any idea how crazy this is? Richie first.
This is the house.
Why the house?
The house always wins. Which is why we don't have to cheat people.
But the math is right. Am I missing something?
No. Programmers decided to write a backdoor into the code.
You saw it. Came to me.
This is a little something for your troubles. Plus, of course, you like sticking around and taking a shot at a real business. Guaranteed 7 figures in the first 18 months.
Ben Affleck.
And Justin Timberlake.
In Runner, Runner. A film that couldn't be more disastrous if it tried.
That's why I didn't go.
Oh, don't make me do this stuff by myself. This is a film.
I was thinking of going to see it. I had a really busy weekend as well. I went to go see Beyonce. Speaking of cinematic events, so you know, I just ran out of time. But I do love watching Justin Timberlake films because it's like, how bad is it going to be?
Well, you know, he did do the Facebook movie, right? So he hasn't made.
Oh right.
Yeah, he hasn't made a whole lot of like totally terrible films, but here he's the lead. This is I think possibly the first time that he's actually. Oh no, cuz he did that Mila Kunis.
In Time.
Hey?
Do you remember In God, Time?
Yes. Yeah, that was pretty awful. And Friends with Benefits was him as well.
Oh, right.
Wasn't it? Yep. So actually, no, he hasn't had much of a run and really probably should get a new agent.
But, well, he does have Inside Llewellyn Davis, so maybe that'll be okay when it comes
out. Yeah, but
here.
He's not the lead in that. Oh, he's not carrying it. You know, the way that he is in this. And, like, the problem here isn't Timberlake, and the problem here certainly isn't Ben Affleck, who is perfectly acceptable as the...
acceptable.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's like, so in this day and age, sometimes that's all you can ask for is, you know, is competence.
Mm.
And the problem here with this film is the premise, you know, the idea. This, so to give you, to tell you what it's all about, Justin Timberlake plays a Princeton student. I think he's maybe an economics student or business student of some description. He used to work on Wall Street, but lost his job in the big downturn due to the financial shenanigans at the merchant banks that basically they make a lot of play about how his all his potential was stolen from him by the crooks on Wall Street. Anyway, he's gone back to college to study, but he's got no money. For some reason, all his money's gone, and he can't afford the tuition fees. But he is a pretty ace gambler, right?
It sounds like it should have turned into Magic Mike, where he strips for money.
Would have been more entertaining, I have to say. So anyway, he makes a little bit of a living selling memberships to online gambling, online poker websites, which he as an affiliate, he makes a little bit of money off every dollar that they lose. He gets called in front of the dean's office and gets told that, you know, gambling on campus is illegal, and he really needs to rethink his priorities. He decides, because he's such a great gambler, we don't get to see any sort of real examples of how great a gambler he is. We just have to take it on trust. He decides that he's going to bet all of his savings on three simultaneous hands of online poker. Now, I don't know about you, but I reckon playing against anything and playing any kind of game of odds against a computer, I just don't trust them. I barely trust it when there's cards in front of me, let alone when, you know, it's like when you go to a casino and you've got the slot machines now, and it used to be that they had physical reels that spun, so you could see what was going on. And now, of course, it's just all a video screen, and you just have to take it completely on trust that the reels, the virtual reels, are actual real reels, you know. And I just think, no, I don't trust you. I'll keep my money, thank you very much. Where's, you know, take me to the bar. And but anyway, so he decides that he's going to play this all of these hands all at once. He's about to make an absolute killing, cover all of his costs for the remainder of his student time, and all of a sudden he loses big time. And in a completely sort of unmotivated move, he has a conversation with somebody who isn't explained who he is or where he's from or where he's gone to, but who can tell him that statistically the win that or the loss that he experienced shouldn't have happened, and that it was like one in a million to one shot that he lost those hands all at the same time, and therefore he's been cheated. But you don't know who it is. Is it like somebody at his old merchant bank? How did he get the information? How did he get the data to show what? Anyway, my head is reeling at this point at just the sheer, you know, we need to get him to Costa Rican-ness of the whole thing. And so he decides that he's going to take all this evidence and go and confront the owner of the online poker site.
It's Ben Affleck.
It's Ben Affleck. All right, who's down in Costa Rica, living at large. He's got a real world casino. He's got all of the computers and all the servers and what have you, and he's frantically paying off all of the local politicians, the casino authority, etc., etc. And the whole thing is all corrupt up the wazoo. And instead of saying to Justin Timberlake, "Thanks for your file," piss off, basically, he offers him a job, because he's obviously so bright, you see, and offers him a job, and because he hasn't got anything much to go back to, and the money is, you know, all super good and all that. He decides that he's just going to hang around, enjoy the sun, make a whole lot of money, and he gets slowly embedded in this.
Does this all happen within like the first 30 minutes?
It's about it's first act.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So first act is how he gets sort of embedded and embroiled in all of this, including falling for Gemma Arterton, who is Ben Affleck's possibly girlfriend, almost certainly right-hand woman. And then the second act is when he sort of discovers quite how shonky the whole thing is. He gets tapped up by the FBI, who have no jurisdiction in Costa Rica, so why they're even there, I don't know. And the third act is how he sort of resolves the situation. So
now that everyone knows the whole film.
Well, I didn't get, that's not spoilers, really. I just said, you know, I mean,
that's all in the trailer.
It's all in the trailer. Boy, oh boy, is it all in the trailer. And so my problem with this is that not for a single, you can probably tell from the way I've described the plot to you, not for a single solitary moment does anything happen in this film that resembles anything that might happen in the real world or with involving real human beings. You know, there's nothing is motivated properly. The world seems to be a schoolboy fantasy of what that world would be like rather than this is a film where you I have to ask yourself, who actually said yes, we'll make it, right? Somebody wrote it, which is, you know, more for them, really. And I can tell you who. I looked them up, right? This is written by Brian Koppelman and David Levine, and they are responsible for
losing the 2 hours of your life.
National Treasure 3, which hasn't been made yet. Solitary Man, which I don't think I saw. Ocean's 13.
Oh, yeah.
They wrote Walking Tall, Runaway Jury. So, he wrote Around Us. Okay. Anyway, so, but this is like somebody should have said, you know, this is a farce. You know, it doesn't work as a thriller. This is straight to video is what it should have been. You know, it should have, and I can imagine that if you stick Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake on a video box cover and make it seem like it's all glamorous and down in Costa Rica and you just put the word thriller on it, you know, you'll get rentals for forever, but it does not belong on a cinema screen. And I was really, really angry and frustrated in ways that it's out of proportion to the film itself.
Do you have two words?
Mine would be dumber, dumber, actually.
Nice.
Because, yeah, I'm on fire today.
You are.
All right. Now, can we talk about a film that you've seen?
Yes.
Because it's been, I'm out of breath. I didn't bring any water. It's hot in here.
It is. We're suffering.
Dad, there's this RV, and they were playing on it. We thought there was someone inside.
You wait here. Let me go.
I couldn't find them.
911.
Detective Loki.
Do you have children, Detective?
I'm going to find your daughters.
Why aren't you sending someone out to go arrest this guy?
Well, he has the IQ of a 10-year-old. There's no way he could abduct two girls and then make them disappear.
Maybe he wasn't on his own.
We're considering all possibilities.
I don't think you are considering all possibilities.
Just let me do my job.
Prisoners, this is a film that lots of people were very, very excited about.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't had more sort of publicity behind it, because it is by Denis Villeneuve, who directed Incendies, which was amazing. So Prisoners he's gone the more star-studded route. So this one stars Hugh Jackman, Jake Gyllenhaal, Viola Davis, Maria Bello, Terrence Howard, a fantastic Melissa Leo, and an even better Paul Dano, even though he's terrifyingly creepy. So it's about two families getting together on Thanksgiving. Their daughters go outside to play. They go try and find a toy, and they disappear. They never come back. And the older brothers and sisters suspect that it was this guy, this RV, who Jake Gyllenhaal, who's the detective. They find this RV with Paul Dano inside, and so Paul Dano is sort of the first suspect in the case. But when there's no evidence against him, he's let go, and he is let go. Hugh Jackman takes it upon himself to kidnap Paul Dano and hold him hostage while his daughters are still missing. And so the title Prisoners is very multi-layered because, you know, we have the girls, we have the parents who are prisoners of their own, trauma. We have Paul Dano who's being held prisoner, and there's all these things going on. And much like Incendies or Incendies, Villeneuve is one of those directors who gives you the hints along the way, but you really have to be watching out for them. And it was so beautiful and so well shot, and there's so much information, but you have to wait for the end for it all to come together. It's like you have to just sit there and take notes like you're playing Cluedo, and then at the end you're like, oh, okay, this happened. But yeah, fantastic performances. I will agree with the two-word review we had. It does feel a bit long. And one of the reasons it feels a bit long is because there are all these terrible things happening to people. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there for 2.5 hours watching these terrible things happen. And after watching Top of the Lake, I was just like, I can't handle this anymore. But it's hard. I find it hard to talk about because it's a beautiful film, beautifully made, great performances. But it's just the content is so gritty and grabs your guts and sort of shakes them around. Dan?
I hated this film.
Really?
I hated this film, and I hate it more the further away that I get from it and the more I think about it. I felt like it ended up being nothing more than a puzzle. And for all of the trappings of a sort of gritty human emotional drama, in the end, everything was manipulated in order to create the solution to a puzzle. So for me, it made me as angry as Inception made me, because its sole purpose is to slot these predetermined pieces together. And I felt that it was, the nastiness of the setup, the nastiness of the crime and the criminals involved was an unnecessary layer of unpleasantness for the puzzle, for it to simply be about a puzzle in the end.
Yeah, and I feel it's not, I feel it's unfairly put as a drama and a thriller, because really this is a horror film. I think, like a kind of true to life horror film. There's not gore; it's just horrible, horrible things.
Yeah, and there's one of the reasons why I'm angry about it was because the craft behind it is so good. Individual scenes work really well, as you say, there's good work performance wise. There's some fantastic editing in terms of creating tension, and there's a lot of, oh my god, what's going to happen next, and you know. But when the final pieces all get put together, and certainly there's, I think, two twists too many in terms of how long the thing gets spun out for, it just made me angry, because it felt, again, you know, the final solution to that particular puzzle, when you put it all together and you look at it and you go, well, that's just like, has that ever happened? Is that really a thing that you should be making people afraid of? It just seems that it was, what's the word? It scaremongering as well. You know, that this is, if you've got kids, oh my god, you're never going to let them go out again, because, you know, the caliber of villain that is out there. These are people who are really, 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 really bad people, and it's like, no, there aren't really. I mean, they're dumb people, but not to the degree of planning that these particular crooks are involved in. I mean, I'm trying to avoid spoilers because some people are going to go and see it despite what I say. But yeah, it made me mad, and I tell you what, it made me mad in a similar way that Incendies made me mad, in that it felt like Incendies did as well, that, you know, there was the last piece of a puzzle that was put together, and this was something where the purpose was to show off how clever you are as a writer, in terms of tying up loose ends and clues and all the rest of it, rather than actually telling some kind of genuine, emotional, authentic human story. So, you know, throughout this film, people respond to things in ways that are designed to make to further the plot, not in ways that you think are actual sort of normal human, you know, responses. So yeah, it just it made me mad. I thought it was gratuitous and exploitative, and I was really disappointed by it, because I was expecting better, unfortunately. Now, I'm just gonna I did a little quick look up to see, because Villeneuve didn't write this one, which I think he wrote Incendies, but he didn't write this one. This was written by a guy called Aaron Guzikowski, and his previous credits on IMDb as a screenwriter is one film called Contraband, which is yes,
no.
that ghastly Damn. Mark Wahlberg thing, right? So here we go. So name to watch out for, everybody. Aaron Guzikowski. See his name on a movie poster. Chances are you're going to get played, right? So that's I'm mad at this film. It was, you know, when you get to 2.5 hours, right, you got to be doing something pretty bloody meaningful, right? Don't get to 2.5 hours just because you're stringing me along.
I was counting scenes to cut out.
Yeah, and
but I still liked it.
Yeah,
I just sort of enjoy being dragged along and then getting it all at the end. I don't know, there's something interesting. It's different than what we've had to watch for the last month, so.
It is, and actually, you're right. When we complain so often on this show about how samey and repetitive everything is, we shouldn't be too churlish about something that comes along that tries to do something different. It did my head in, actually. And you know, sometimes that happens, you know, when you're more upset when you watch a film that lets you down from a high level of anticipation than you are when something like Runner comes along, where you just go, oh well, you knew it was going to be a turkey and it turned out to be a turkey, and it made me mad, but I didn't feel personally affronted like I was sort of during Prisoners, where I feel like a director's job is to make it seem to the audience like there was no writer involved at all. Right? It's to make the writer disappear. It's to make everything that happens on screen seem like it's just a completely organic progression through event after event, and motivation after motivation, and character trait, etc. And both Prisoners and Runner, I was conscious at almost every moment of the invisible hand of the writer steering things in a particular direction in order to make the puzzle fit together properly.
Right.
And, you know, that for me is a failure as a director. So, two words. I've got to think of mine now while you're doing yours.
Real terror.
Okay, my two words for Prisoners are, just...
Let down.
Sorry. Yeah, let down. Yeah, let's go with let down, because I really was. And, you know, this is a film having, you know, played Telluride this year, and I would have, if I'd been to Telluride this year, I would have
another level of anger at it.
I know. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just bitter.
You're just projecting.
That might be it. Either way, extremely disappointing. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. Next week on the show, Simon will be back. Tom Hanks is taken hostage in Captain Phillips, and hopefully we'll get to play some of our live Q&A interview with Leanne Pooley and Chad Moffat from Beyond the Edge. All that and more in next week's no doubt exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast.
Can I just have a spoiler for next week's show? Because there are some advanced screenings of it. If you do need a break from all this like doom and gloom, About Time is really nice. I think you'll like it. Really, just it's just nice. It's just niceness. So there okay. you go, people.
All little right. tip. Yeah. Okay. So and so now you know how Kaylee feels about it. Let's get your 2-word reviews in for it, and then maybe we could have a little virtual battle going on between our audience and our presenters. So About Time in next week's show. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favorite podcasting software, so the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. We very nearly didn't make it to the show today because I decided that I would update my Mac to Mavericks, and it seems to have managed to survive the process. Phew. Let's hope it makes the podcast management process on iTunes a little bit better, because I have been wrangling with that one for weeks and weeks and weeks. You can contact us with your 2-word reviews.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter via @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd, where you can read our 2-word reviews.
Yeah, when I get around to it. Sorry, yeah. just in case people are getting all excited about that, we're a little bit behind.
Yeah, you can find us on there as Cinematica, and as always on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
And you're back to updating the website this week?
Yes.
Because I did the last two, didn't I?
Yes.
Yes, and boy, it's, yeah, so I'm glad that weight is off my shoulders once again. The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. This is Christoph Beck's theme tune from Runner Runner. It's actually not the theme tune. This is a track called Escape from Costa Rica, which is, in fact, a spoiler in itself.
If you are going to go to it now.
Until next week, that's all from me.
And all from me.